The term laser stands for light amplification by stimulated emission of radiation. Lasers have been used in all fields of medicine, including the removal of kidney stones, treating varicose veins, corneal eye surgery, and the repair of detached retinas. Lasers have been used for a variety of dermatologic conditions as well, and dermatologists continue to pioneer their uses in the medical field. In this dialogue, Dr. Shadi Kurosh and Dr. Kay Van Nori discuss the non-cosmetic uses of lasers in dermatology.
This is Dr. Shadi Kurosh from the Department of Dermatology at Massachusetts General Hospital. And in this edition of Dialogues, I have the privilege of interviewing Dr. Kay Van Nori, Professor of Dermatology, Ophthalmology, and Otolaryngology at the University of Miami, Miller School of Medicine, and the Director of the Dermatologic Surgery Unit. Dr. Nori, we're so glad that you could join us today.
Thank you so much, Shadi. It's a great pleasure for me to be here, and thank you for including me. So instead of talking about all the cosmetic indication, which most of people talk about, we're going to try to concentrate on the medical indication and perhaps more rare uses of lasers. Specifically, we're going to try to cover several areas.
Wonderful. We're so glad to have you today. And the topic of interest for today, as you said, is the non-conventional uses of lasers. So as we know, lasers are more commonly used in dermatology or more commonly associated with cosmetic uses. However, they have medical indications that may be options for treatments of various medical conditions. So today we're going to start with scars. We'll talk about skin cancers, acne, onychomycosis, and psoriasis and vitiligo. So to begin, let's talk about scars. So something that's very interesting is the use of lasers for scar revision, that classically, surgical and dermabrasion have been used as methods, but I know that there are very exciting uses of lasers that your group and other groups have used. So could you please highlight some of those uses of lasers for scar revision?
So lasers that have been used for treatment of scars have included CO2 laser, argon, and DIAG laser, non-ablative lasers. And what we're going to try to concentrate today is going to be the use of pulse dye laser and also fractional lasers for treatment of scars. So initially, as you know, CO2 has been used for treatment of scars, but the problem with CO2 is CO2 causes a lot of trauma to the tissue. So if somebody is prone to get keloid or hypertrophic scars, they may actually worsen that scarring process. I'm talking about fully ablative CO2 laser. Now, pulse dye laser has been used in many occasions for treatment of scars, especially burn scars and also red scars. This has been done by a number of different investigators, including our own dermatology investigators, such as Dr. Alster and Dr. Fitzpatrick, that they have actually demonstrated an improvement of the scars with a pulse dye laser. Our group have actually conducted several investigations looking at the role of pulse dye laser for treatment of the scar starting on the suture removal day. And by that, I mean the patient who had the Mohs surgery done came in for their suture removal. On the day of the suture removal, we actually started treating their scar with the pulse dye laser. And this was actually a very unconventional method because the previous literature has stated that you cannot touch the scar till at least about 6 months post-op, or minimum 2 months. And the reason is, as you know, minimum 2 months, actually. And the reason is, as you know, even 6 months after the surgery, the wound is not completely healed. It's only 40%. It only reaches 40% of its original tensile strength. So pulse dye laser in this study was used on the day of the suture removal. Half of the scar was treated with a pulse dye laser, 585 nanometer, 10 millimeter spot size, and 3.5 joules, and the other half was left as control. So this scar was treated on a monthly basis for a total of 3 sessions, and the final evaluation was done 1 month after the last treatment. Looking at it with a Vancouver Scar Scale, as well as cosmetic visual analog scale. And basically, looking at all those parameters, the side that was treated with the pulse dye laser did significantly better than the control in Vancouver Scar Scale, as well as cosmetic appearance.
So this is very interesting. This revolutionizes the idea of scar remodeling.
Correct.
That the idea that because of scar remodeling, treatment could only occur much later, but it sounds like your group has demonstrated that the treatment of a scar can happen from the very beginning of scar formation.
Very good point, Shadi. That's exactly the point of the study, that it can actually intervene as early as the day after suture removal, which is clearly the wound is not healed, and try to improve the scarring.
Very interesting. So another interesting topic for which lasers, I understand, have been used are in the treatment of skin cancers, which can be really relevant for patients, for example, that may not be great candidates for surgery, either because they have medical conditions that may make surgery difficult for them to tolerate, or because perhaps they have a high burden of tumor disease, for example, genetic syndromes where they have high amounts of skin cancers. So I understand that you have experience with the use of lasers for some of these skin cancers.
Sure. So just to summarize, you know, I'm by training mostly, you know, I'm a mole surgeon, so I do a lot of skin cancer surgeries. The burden of skin cancer actually dramatically increasing. I think in 2010 in the JAAD, the latest publication was there is about 3.5 million incidents of skin cancer in the U.S. alone. So this is a very significant problem. It's one of the most important problems that we have to deal with. Now, the lasers that have been used for treatment of skin cancers have included both ablative lasers, and we're going to talk about also some lasers that use more of a theory of selective photothermolysis, targeting a specific chromophore. Ablative lasers that have been used for, and by the way, most of these studies have been done with basal cells. But in terms of ablative lasers have been tried both for basal cell carcinoma and squamous cell carcinomas with varying success. For example, we did a study on the 3 patients with basal cell Nevus syndrome. We essentially took them to the operating room and we treated literally hundreds of these small basal cells with a 3 millimeter handpiece of, you know, CO2 laser, and got very good results. And actually afterward we did the excision of the site and we cut through the tumor using the Mohs sections, and we didn't see any residual basal cell carcinomas at the site. So that can definitely be an option. CO2 laser can be done. There are several groups that have also done it for squamous cell carcinoma in situ and others as well, CO2 laser. I'm talking about fully ablative. And you already mentioned CO2 laser has been used for treatment of actinic keratitis. It has also been done as a full-face ablative procedure to try to reduce the burden of actinic keratosis in the past. And I think currently there are some studies on fractional ablative devices, like fractional CO2, to reduce the actinic keratosis. Now, basal cell carcinoma, being the most common tumor, has been probably studied the most for treatment with mainly pulse dye laser. So pulse dye laser, as you know, using a selective photothermolysis, essentially targets the, you know, oxyhemoglobin or in, you know, oxyhemoglobin. So pulse dye laser has been used for treatment of basal carcinoma targeting, you know, the blood, actually within the vessels. So several studies has been done using pulse dye laser, some of them showing a very low cure rate, some showing as high as almost 92% cure rate. Mostly has been used for patients that are not candidates for Mohs surgery. In other words, exclusion criteria includes morpheiform basal cell carcinomas, infiltrating basal cell carcinomas that are obviously not a candidate for treatment with the laser, but really should undergo Mohs micrographic surgery. So superficial basal cell carcinoma, nodular basal cell carcinomas have been tried with pulse dye laser.
Great. What about for drug delivery for cancers? I understand that certain field treatments for skin cancers could improve in their efficacy with the use of a combination of lasers.
Yes, fractional ablative device has been used to deliver drugs. And there are some studies, especially concerned on photodynamic therapy. In other words, you know, instead of you just applying the light topically to the skin and waiting for the incubation time and then shine the blue light, they've actually created tiny little holes, you know, with a fractional ablative, and then they apply the ALA solution, and they get, this way you get a better penetration of the drug and potentially better efficacy of the treatment of photodynamic therapy and reduction of actinic keratosis. And also there are some studies looking at imiquimod delivery that they noticed that if you actually create those holes, and this was an in vitro study, not in vivo, create those tiny holes and apply imiquimod, the concentration of the drug that is needed is much less than if you don't create those holes. So we can apply with a much less concentration of the drug.
Because the absorption is better.
Yes. The only thing you have to be cautious is for treatment of cancer, if you create those tiny little holes, you may potentially create a non-continuous tumor, which can be a problem for treatment down the line.
And this is probably why certain types of BCCs, like morpheiform, or invasive,
yes,
are excluded.
Yes, but even I'm talking about nodulars too.
Even nodulars.
Even those, okay, you have to be careful. So I would not I mean, yet I have to, I'm just cautioning you that if you create those holes in a, you know, in a discontinuous fashion, you can, you know, deliver drugs, but you can also create a discontinuous tumor. So if you cut it out, even the pathologist or Mohs surgeon cannot be able to see it and call it negative.
So the clinician really has to think about inclusion criteria, not only for the type of patient, but also for the type of non-melanoma skin cancer. Okay, great. So another topic that I'm sure is relevant to many clinicians in this country is acne. Acne is possibly the most common medical condition that the general dermatologist treats, and even though there is a broad arsenal of therapeutics, we often find ourselves frustrated that topicals may not be effective enough, or there are compliance issues with topicals. Even systemic therapies that can be effective have other considerations that may be obstacles for patients, such as in the case of isotretinoin. So I think that it's been exciting for a lot of people to think of light as a therapeutic modality for acne. So I was wondering if you could comment on the options that are available.
Sure, yeah. We have tried many different treatments, including topical and systemic, and each one of them has their potential side effects and problems. So the question is whether there is any role for late lights and lasers for treatment of acne. And in my opinion, yes, definitely there is. And the reason is P. acne itself can actually produce a protoporphyrin 9. And protoporphyrin 9 is actually what we use in photodynamic therapy as a target to try to cause that oxidative reaction, free radical formation. And so that P. acne protoporphyrin 9 production can actually, essentially with the combination of light, can cause a photodynamic reaction. And that photodynamic reaction can actually get rid of the P. acne itself and improve the acne process. So in my mind, I divide the light and light, laser lights that are used in for treatment of acne into two main categories: short wavelength of light and also long wavelength of light. Short wavelength being like a pulse dye laser 585, 595, blue light and red light. Essentially, they cause this photodynamic therapy that we just talked about in a combination with the P. acne. The longer wavelength of light, mostly in the infrared ranges, they essentially go deeper and they target the sebaceous glands. And by targeting the sebaceous glands, they actually cause shrinkage of those sebaceous glands. They heat the sebaceous glands, they cause them to shrink, reduce the sebum secretion, and as a result, improve the acne. The second effect that they're going to have is by penetrating deep and hitting the collagen, they cause the shrinkage of the collagen, and as a result, improvement of the acne scarring.
So what's the efficacy that has been seen with these treatments thus far?
I think it varies quite a bit. Some of them have been very effective, like, for example, the 1450 nanometer laser, diode laser, has shown very good efficacy for treatment of acne on the face and back. Photodynamic therapy, both in combination of blue light alone or red light alone or combination of blue and red, has shown very good efficacy. Many people actually alternate. If you have devices that have both the blue head and the red head, you can alternate the two heads and treat the patient twice a week, you know, alternating blue and red head, and you get fairly good results for treatment of inflammatory acne. Now, most of these studies have been done in inflammatory acne. So inflammatory acne seems to be the one that responds the best for treatment. One other thing that actually has been used for treatment of acne is a newer modality called the photopneumatic device. A photopneumatic is a combination of a vacuum and also intense pulse light in the range of 400 to 1200 nanometer.
So an IPL.
IPL. An IPL covering both from 400 to 1200 nanometer, covering both the short wavelength and also up to the long wavelength, infrared wavelength. So it covers both. So this device actually causes the vacuum to suck the skin, bring the sebaceous glands closer to the skin, and then after that, the light is fired in that range, causing both PDT reaction as well as heating the sebaceous glands, and as a result, improving the acne.
Fantastic. Great. So another topic that is of much interest to the general clinician is onychomycosis, that this is another therapeutic challenge for many physicians. Sometimes people think of it as the common cold of dermatology. It's so common, but we don't have great cures for it. We know that topical modalities have been tried without much benefit. Even systemic regimens of PO therapies have been tried with moderate efficacy, but a lot of patients are still pretty frustrated. So there's been a lot of talk of lasers for onychomycosis. What do you think in terms of the potential and efficacy of this?
So the question is there any role for, again, lasers on light for treatment of onychomycosis? I guess the answer to that is the jury is still out, yes. But there are really no great clinical trials that are out there showing the efficacy of these lasers for treatment of onychomycosis. But there are many devices that are currently FDA approved for treatment of onychomycosis. But the important thing to remember is, you know, when FDA approves these devices, it approves them showing that only temporary increase in clear nail growth. Okay, temporary increase in clear nail growth. It doesn't say cure. It doesn't say the onychomycosis is going to go away. It's just showing that the proximal part of your nail is going to be more clear than before.
So this FDA indication may be important to discuss with patients in terms of managing their expectations, don't
Correct.
You think?
Yes, yes, exactly. And especially if you're talking about the toenail onychomycosis that can take a very long time to grow out, you know, you have to make sure the patient understands that, you know, they're not going to have a completely normal nail. And even if they do, it could take years before they can see that, you know, before all the nail comes out.
Right. So what kinds of lasers are being tried for this?
So there are different wavelengths that have been used for treatment of onychomycosis. Some of the FDA-approved ones are 1320 nanometer NDAC laser, 1064 nanometer NDAC long pulse, the same 1064 NDAC laser Q-switch, 532 nanometer output NDAC laser, 630 to 680 nanometer output NDAC laser, the 980 nanometer diode, and also the 870 slash, combination of 870 slash 930 nanometer diode.
So it sounds like there are several options, but what do you think is the wavelength range and sort of the quality of a laser that would need to be used in order to have efficacy?
Most of these wavelengths that I mentioned, most of them, not all of them, are in the infrared ranges, right? And the reason is you want to penetrate deep enough to get to the nail bed. Now remember that the fungus is actually not in the nail plate, it's actually located in the nail bed. So you want to go deep enough so you can actually reach the nail bed and treat the fungus in the nail bed. The mechanism of action is really not known, so I cannot really say if there is any specific wavelength that causes the treatment. But could be a direct inactivation of fungus by heat. Heat is one potential mechanism. Could be a creation of this reactive oxygen species that we talk about in photodynamic therapy, essentially. Or it can be a selective photothermolysis, meaning that there is a specific chromophore within the fungus that these lasers are actually targeting.
That has not yet been identified?
No, I don't think so.
Very interesting.
So going through the lasers that have been used, the CO2 laser has been used. CO2 laser fully ablative has been used for treatment of onychomycosis with some varying results. Or it can also be used as drug delivery. In other words, you create tiny holes again in the nail, and then you deliver these topical medications to the nail bed to try to treat the fungus. There are some, photodynamic therapy is probably the mostly studied modality for treatment of onychomycosis. And again, using topical photosensitizer that cause PDT, such as the ALA, or other topicals have also been used. Some synthetic topicals have also been used in combination causing photodynamic therapy.
Right. And finally, I wanted to ask you about some medical conditions that have a long history in terms of the use of light for their treatment, such as psoriasis and vitiligo. And now it's exciting to see these intensified light sources, such as lasers, being used for them. So I was wondering if you could comment on the use of lasers for conditions like psoriasis.
In terms of the lasers and light, probably the most common laser that's being used right now for treatment of psoriasis and vitiligo hyperpigmentation is eczema laser, 308 nanometer eczema. That laser works well for, you know, patient with a small and limited number of psoriatic plaques. I think it's going to be very difficult to treat the whole body with the tiny little handpiece that these lasers come with. but it can work well for small plaque psoriasis. It also has been used for treatment of vitiligo and hypopigmentation, either alone or in combination with some topical medication, topical immune modulators such as tacrolimus. In combination, they have shown some efficacy for improvement of vitiligo. Pulse dye laser has also been used for treatment of psoriasis. The mechanism of action of pulse dye laser can be multiple different things. As you know, you have those dilated vessels in the dermis. So maybe the microvessel destruction as a mechanism, decreasing the number of cytotoxic T cells in the epidermis, or decreasing the number of helper T cells in the dermis can be a potential mechanism for pulse dye laser.
So you're saying that in the case of the PDL, perhaps these dilated vessels in the dermal papilla that are the histological equivalent of the Auschwitz sign are perhaps what's being treated with the laser?
Yes, and maybe again some anti-inflammatory effects by affecting the T cells.
Very interesting. Well, Dr. Noori, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been very insightful. Thank you so much, Shadi.
It was a pleasure.
In dermatologic surgery, lasers have been used for both cosmetic and medical treatments. This dialogue highlighted the medical uses of lasers for acne, scarring, skin cancer, and onychomycosis. Acne is prevalent in teens and adults and is one of the most common conditions seen in a dermatologist's office. The destruction of the sebaceous glands and the destruction of propionibacterial acnes via lasers with photodynamic therapy has proven to be effective in some inflammatory acne. It is difficult to know where lasers will eventually fit in the overall management of acne vulgaris. Assessment of long-term outcomes and side effects are still necessary. Scars are a common complaint among patients of all ages. Patients commonly present to dermatologists for scars after having surgical procedures. Most recently, pulse dye lasers and fractional lasers have been used for the treatment of scars. Earlier intervention has been shown to be most effective in the treatment of scars. The pulse dye laser has been effective for both burn scars and red scars. The pulse dye laser is largely considered the first-line therapy among lasers for treating hypertrophic scars and keloids. Hypertrophic scars have an average of at least 50 to 80% improvement after two laser treatments. Keloid scars and more fibrotic hypertrophic scars usually require additional laser treatments to achieve desired results. More recently, fractional lasers have been used for scars. They deliver high-intensity light fractionated through focused lenses to uniformly generate arrays of microscopic columns of thermal injury surrounded by uninjured tissue. These tiny columns of injury are termed microscopic thermal treatment zones. The undamaged surrounding tissue allows for a reservoir of viable tissue, permitting rapid epidermal repair, decreasing patient downtime. Both ablative and non-ablative fractional lasers have been tried successfully for the treatment of scars. The physician can adjust the energy of the laser and the density of the microscopic thermal treatment zones. Many fractional laser devices have been approved for the treatment of acne scars, periorbital rigidities, skin resurfacing, soft tissue coagulation, and melasma. Each year in the U.S., nearly 5 million people are treated for skin cancer. Over the past three decades, more people have had skin cancer than all other cancers combined. Ablative lasers have been used for the treatment of skin cancers. Additionally, lasers that use the theory of selective photothermolysis, targeting a specific chromophore, have also been used to treat skin cancers, specifically basal cells. Basal cell carcinoma, being the most common tumor, has been probably studied the most for treatment with mainly pulse dye laser. Pulse dye laser, using selective photocatalysis, targets oxyhemoglobin, the actual blood within the vessels. This offers an option for patients that are not surgical candidates. Laser therapy for onychomycosis may be helpful to minimize side effects of systemic medications, to limit treatment to only the affected areas, and as a treatment option for patients with liver disease or other comorbidities. Lasers also are beneficial as microbial resistance is not relevant. The Q-switch ND-YAG laser, 532 nanometer and 1064 nanometer wavelengths, inhibits the growth of the fungal colony. Therapy by thermolysis needs maximum temperature in the fungus layers to be effective, and minimal temperature elevation in uninvolved tissue to increase safety and reduce pain. The goal for effective treatment is to heat and hold tissue temperature at 43 to 46 degrees Celsius, as indicated by yellow light emitting diodes. The use of lasers in all fields of medicine holds exciting possibilities for the future. Refinements in laser technology have provided patients and dermatologists with more therapeutic choices and improved clinical results for both cosmetic and medical indications. The demand for laser surgery has increased as a result of the efficacy of these procedures, combined with a low incidence of adverse post-procedural side effects. I hope you enjoyed this edition of Dialogues in Dermatology. Next month, we look forward to three new dialogues on stress, cultural competency, and pigmentation. Remember to download the Dialogues in Dermatology app for your smartphone. We also want you to join us on Facebook for fun, previews, and educational info. This has been Terry Cronin with Dialogues in Dermatology. Stay passionate about dermatology and keep up all the great work you're doing on behalf of your patients. I'm proud of your commitment to your patients and your personal commitment to continuing medical education. Have another great month.